Okay, thank you as well. The concern about national insurance is an interesting one. I don't quite understand the implications of changing the status of the national insurance, but it was a little bit alarming to see in the newspaper their announcement that the unemployment fund was empty. Not that they were unable to pay unemployment claims, but that that fund had been exhausted. It's a bit worrisome. Do we have time for one more call, John? Okay, my producer says yes, so we'll take one more before the news. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dr. Hines.
Yes.
Good afternoon, Dr. Hines.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the program.
Welcome to the... Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I am very glad that you spoke about the minimum wages because, Dr. Hines, I work at a particular gas station for years. And in 2000... I work from, in 2013, I work with a particular gas station. I ain't calling the name.
No, don't call
but
it.
But I work there, and I never get a big, I had called in about this year already, early up in the year. I had get a raise from $7.25 to $7.50 from 2013 to up to 2018. I worked all my years as a gas attendant, and we only used to get $6.24, and this was years. When we first worked, we wanted to join the union. But a lot of people don't want to join the union because they get scared. Because bosses understand that you join the union, you could get fired. You know, and a lot of people...
And that's against the law.
...like to join the union, but you know, you're scared. And the thing that the unions never come out and share and try to explain to the gas attendants, you know, like what they could do to help the attendants. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of gas attendants don't join the union. But a lot of attendants don't get no money. Miss Hines, I'm telling you, a lot of gas attendants still work for $6.24. You will work. They only got a couple of gas stations that is paid, and I can tell you one gas station that will pay. That workers used to get a good wage, and they will get shoes and all that there. Other gas stations, you don't get any shoes. You go up pay for your uniform. You understand? Mm. And something you have go work with the same $6.25, Miss Hines.
And yeah,
I could call, I'm telling you that because I work at a gas station. And I tell Miss Hines, I work hard. When I tell you hard, and I work for that $7. And I'm 50, and I think, Miss Hines, you know, is working, getting 25 cents. You get 25 cents for the raise. That is what I get, Miss Hines, for the raise. That when I left there in 2018, I get dismissed from work wrongfully, and this is 2 years, Miss Hines. You hear what I'm telling you? This 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I can't work anymore because my foot is not. I can't work because of my foot. But I was
so did you apply for disability?
Yes, I get disability. But what I'm saying is that a lot of these gas attendants compare because people ain't getting this small amount of money. They getting this money for years, Miss Hines, and I feel that they should make the attendant gas attendant is get insulted. People is tell you a lot insulting things, and you go work hard. Some gas stations, Miss Hines, you go check the oil. You go be good. If you ain't good, you will call off your job, Miss Hines. You call off your job. And
but you know that there's another. I understand, and I feel all that you are saying. You said it very effectively and emotionally, but I think It's a really difficult situation because if you go to other places, you will see that this is not even a job. And I think this is what allows for it to be such a low paid job in Barbados. So if you go to the US, for instance, if you go to the UK, you pump your own gas. And I think there is a fear that if the minimum wage is increased, some of these jobs will disappear and automation and self-service will be used instead. Anyway, thank you so much for your call. We are going to take a break now for the 12:30 edition of the news. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon. This is Down to Brass Tacks, the Tuesday, not Wednesday, I'm ahead of myself, Tuesday edition, March 9th, 2021. I am Dr. Christina Hines, and you can call 434-1790 if you would like to participate in the program, or you can send us your WhatsApp messages via 266-4862. We've had a lot of discussions so far, ranging from the COVAX facility and the access of vaccines for Barbados and the Caribbean. We've discussed the minimum wage in Barbados, and that has been quite an interesting and also very heartfelt discussion, I would say. And there are some questions about things such as the care packages. Are these still being delivered? And have the vaccinations ceased? I saw that some of the WhatsAppers have indicated that the care packages are currently on pause. I can't confirm if that's true or not, because I don't know. I really don't. And I would expect that the vaccinations would be just winding down right now, because it sounds like we are at the number expected or anticipated. So there's a lot for us to discuss, and as I mentioned, the monkey issue has arisen once again. I really would like for us to, if there's anyone who has their thoughts on the minimum wage discussion in Barbados, both sides, to really let us know if this is something that is feasible at this time in your opinion, whether from the perspective of the employer or the employee. And oh, very interesting on the news as well, we were talking a little bit about corruption, and then we heard on the 12:30 edition of the latest that the government is going to establish an anti-terrorism and anti-corruption agency. The fact that the two of these have been combined says to me that this sounds like a response to some kind of external imperative and agenda, where anti-money laundering and terrorist financing tend to be combined in things such as regulations for the banking sector. I don't know the extent to which we have serious terrorist concerns in Barbados, but there is a concern that our banking sector, our offshore financial sector, can somehow facilitate both tax evasion and illicit activities, including terrorist financing. And as we have seen, the government of Barbados has worked diligently to get off of such lists, so-called blacklists, quite aptly, and to be moved instead onto a grey list and hopefully off all together. Sadly, the entire region has not been as successful in Barbados in being moved off of this blacklist, with these connected assumptions that terrorist financing, tax evasion, and other illicit activities are conducted via the Caribbean, and not just that they're conducted here, but more so than any other place in the world. Those are just my thoughts coming out of the news break. I'll turn it over to you now, callers. What's on your minds? Good afternoon. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Yes, good afternoon, Dr. Hines.
Yes.
Always
welcome.
Good to thank you. Always good to hear you.
Thank you.
And let me just hop your discussion bus today. I moved the call today after listening to the exchange between David Ellis and a youngster discussing employment too. And of course, the guy was very articulate, and he was qualified. He said in political science, he had a degree in political science, and he was discussing his experience, which was a very heartfelt one. daunting experience. And at the end of the discussion, there were some calls and some comments and some guidance given to him. Good advice. But I think that he might have been misunderstood, because some of the advice was that despite the fact you have a qualification in a specific discipline, you need not seek, not that you shouldn't seek, but you could accept employment in other areas, most likely until you get what you are looking for, and that it was better than staying at home and things like that. And that's good advice, but I think that such calls would imply that he was misunderstood, because if you listen to this guy carefully, he didn't call the program because he was lazy or anything of the sort, nor was he looking for only for a job that matched his qualifications. And the evidence is that he was working for 3 years. So it couldn't be that he wasn't sitting down. He also was working, because remember, he was working at a call center. I don't know if you listened to the conversation, but he was working at a call center. And David quizzed him about the remunerations he was getting, and he said he worked for $500 every fortnight. I really thought that was tough, because with his qualifications and thing, you know? So he was getting $250 a week. So
yeah.
This is not a guy that at all was lazy. As a matter of fact, he gave no indication whatsoever that he called the program because he wanted anything to match his qualifications. He called the program merely because he said, at this very point in time, currently, he is unemployed. So all along, he was working for this lower pay for these years. Mm-hmm. He never called this forum. Maybe he complained in his circles, but he never called this forum yet to complain. And to call the program yesterday had to be out of desperation. I believe so, because he even mentioned, like, bordering on mental health issues within the last year, as a consequence of just being home. And you know, COVID exacerbated the circumstances for him. So I said out of it, I thought that there are a few lessons that we can learn out of this, right? Because, you know, children finish school these days and they go and pick up any and every kind of job. As a matter of fact, David asked him a very important question. Wasn't he warned? Or did anybody tell him about what was the likely outcome of doing that type of degree? Well, Lady Cousin, and he said yes, he had warning. But I still believe that young people need to be very careful in choosing the career, looking at career options and taking a career path. I know that some people will do a degree sometimes, and not him though, I'm not referring to him, but some people do a degree because some people say, I want a degree, and they're going to choose a degree that may be the easiest for me to do so I can have a degree. But that doesn't always work out too well. So I believe that maybe within the school setting, say the secondary schools, the career guidance officers has to be on the ball and look seriously at what is going on in the country and help youngsters to plot the path properly. So, because a degree takes time. And if you read the paper standard, you might soon be paying 40% of the tuition fee, because I read that in the standard paper. That's being discussed. That's being discussed, right? Yeah.
Can I come in here?
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of things that you said. For me, well, I teach political science, so.
Right.
And one of the things that is a good degree, you get a lot of skills. A lot of degrees offer a variety of skills. I think one of the issues is that people expect to have their job built into their degree. And
right.
And I'm not saying that of this caller that you're referring to at all. And
right.
I think that this is not the case. There are skills that people can acquire in different degree programs that are transferable to other places, research skills, writing. There are a variety of skills that people right. can transfer. And what we see, what I have seen, is that some of our graduates go into all kinds of areas that you may not expect with a degree in political science. And I would say that that might be the case in other areas as well. So I think one of the things that we have to educate people about right. is that you have to also be, with your qualifications, you need right. to be creative in showing to potential employers what you can bring to their business. But as I was saying also, yep. I think one of the things that especially young people have to consider today is yeah. that jobs may not be available coming out of this pandemic in the same way that they were available before. And we have to rethink how work is going to look and how we are going to fit into this world of work, which may mean that people have multiple jobs. One of the things yeah. that it may be a little bit startling to people is that people with PhDs like myself, a lot of my friends, people that I've gone to school with, that I've encountered in other places, they do not, in the United States of America, in Canada, and to some extent even here across the region, many of these people are not finding full-time employment. And these are people who are highly qualified. They may be working a series of adjunct posts, so that's part-time teaching. Part-time yeah. teaching here at UE, part-time teaching at BCC, doing consultancy work on the side, and it does pose some difficulties in terms of stability of income, but I think that this may be the direction, unfortunately, in some ways, that work is going. My heart really goes out to everybody who has experienced unemployment during this pandemic, because it is hard enough as it is. And yeah. the prospects of finding work in this environment are just, they seem dismal. It's easy right. to lose hope. And I would really want to encourage people to not lose hope.
But that I would yes, say please. That you said a lot of things I wanted to say, right?
Oh, okay, because, my reader.
Because but you say it eloquently too. So that's a good thing about it. Because I was thinking, when you do a degree, let's say you do a degree in computer science, there are so many other sub courses that you do that you are qualified in.
Yes.
And even to go into a degree program, you come with qualifications. And there are
That's
jobs
right.
at all different levels along the way. So, for example, you do a degree, you could end up doing accounts. You may be doing political science, but you could still do accounts, math, Spanish, computers. All these enable you to teach, sometimes say, at private institutions, maybe part-time, as you said, in government institutions, whatever. So there are a lot of job options down the line for which you are qualified, but the name of your degree is not included in them. Now, let me show you another way where people make mistakes. I am an employer of people doing crafts and woodwork and so, right? If you come to me for employment and tell me that you have a master's degree or you have a degree, I will consider maybe not accepting you, because I am thinking you come in looking for a degree, period, for which my job is not at that level. So I am wondering if sometimes, depending upon the job that you are applying for, if you should not just offer the information only on the qualification up to the level that is required for the job.
When you submit your CV, it should be truthful. And by withholding information, you're not telling the truth. And I think sometimes employers or prospective employers may make
right.
assumptions about what people are looking for. And if
right.
I have a master's degree and I've not worked for a year, for
right.
it to be turned down for a job because you might think that I want a certain level of pay may be a bit unfair. I may be very willing at this point in time to take the job and to do my best in it because of how difficult things are. Now, clearly you have other things that you would need to take in mind in your calculations as to whether or not I may be the best applicant for the job. But I find it sometimes unfair when I hear past students, I've had similar experiences in the past as well. People have said
right.
to me, we don't want to hire you for this job because you're overqualified.
yes,
for what you wish to pay.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, anyhow, well, it depends. If you come to me for a job, you may not have to give me a CV. I wish my father just ask you, what is you can do regarding what I do? And you may say, well, you know, I have a master's
degree. Well, I'll bear that in mind in case I need one, so. Let me
make this final point now, because I know we had a little time here. Now, in the context of populating Barbados, as we had a little talk about that on Sunday, when you have so many people, and this guy is representative of a lot of people in Barbados, he's just one of call, but a lot of people are like this. When you have so many people unemployed, or they're employed and cannot get a decent wage, got qualifications by their security guards or gas station attendant, and for years, how are you supposed to get bringing in, say, 80,000 people and dumping them in Barbados, as the caller Sunday was suggesting? I would like to use an analogy of a house. I have a house running or renting an apartment or something, and I want some extra help with the payment, so I bring in people. You bring in any amount of people and say, let them help me with the rent because they're going to get more money. But then what about water usage that would increase, and the sewage and the electricity and possible damage to the property and so on? So you may be gaining six or one and a half a dozen. I believe there has to be an optimum point at which you can bring in people. I don't think that because Singapore, as I have heard someone said already, Singapore do it so we could do it. Can you just
do it? Speak in my language.
You could just get external models and just come and drop them from Barbados because it's going on with it.
I agree with you wholeheartedly because, to be very honest, when I started hearing this narrative about Barbados being underpopulated, I was very surprised. I did geography in secondary school and I've read things, and I've always heard that Barbados was a very densely populated place.
Exactly.
And I decided, well, maybe this is the old information because I went to secondary school a long time ago. So I started to look, and Barbados is still one of the most densely populated countries in the world. Other words, the number of people that live in Barbados compared to the size of this small rock is a lot. So I am wondering, do we actually have a population issue, or is there another issue that the government of Barbados is trying to resolve? And this issue may have to do with the composition of the population, which is that we have a larger component of our population who are in the older category, who need to be supported, for instance, by the National Insurance Scheme. And if the distribution of our population is such that it is top heavy with the larger number of the population being those 65 years and older, then we may have an issue with replenishing the National Insurance Scheme. So we need more people to contribute to the National Insurance. That is what it is. But it's not that there are too few people in Barbados. Barbados is a packed place.
I feel it overpopulated. Look, I hear the narrative, though, that you just mentioned there about the National Insurance and the population becoming an aged population. It's confused me a little bit sometimes because I think that a lot of the people dying when they listen to death these days compared to years ago.
But the birth rate is low by comparison, right? So
okay. But tell me something. Is money the only solution? Is bringing in, increasing the population the only solution? Because going back to the house analogy, if I want more money, why can't I look at improving my job situation? In other words, finding a more creative way of earning less without bringing more people in my property to confuse me. So the government now has to look at other ways of creating wealth in the country rather than just going and populating the people. Because you bring in, as somebody said, you bring in crime, you bring in a whole new, you're shifting your culture and all when you do that kind of thing. So I think the government really needs to revisit that and look at an alternative way of handling the old. Because sometimes people say you don't only need finance to help the aged, but you also need the health care. But when you look at the people who go into health care programs like care of the elderly, most of them don't be young people. So whereas 65 and over might be the largest group, The people below 65 actually enroll in courses currently to care for the elderly, because people at 65 and older can be cared by people between, say, 35 and 60 years as well. Thank you, Dr. Hines, for today's.
Thank you. Thank you also. Very interesting discussion. Let's take another call. I'm sure people are waiting. Good afternoon. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Good afternoon. You're having a very interesting discussion.
Yes, I called to talk about
two things, but I want to deal with what you said just now about people applying for a job. I think if they ask to submit a curriculum vitae, that suggests that the person should cover what they've done during their life, which would include their master's or their PhD. But if they ask to submit a resume, I would think that they can get away with putting what they think is relevant.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so. The resume normally connotes that you are given a basic summary of things that are relevant to what you are applying for. So I think that ethically, you might get away with not putting in your PhD. That's a moot point, though. I really called to talk about the social partnership. And the suggestion being made by Reverend Paul, I don't know what his title right now in the Catholic Church, we suggested that the church should be a member of the social partnership. Let me say up front that the social partnership is really a misnomer, because it was really an economic partnership arrangement.
Yes.
This came into place in 1993 after all the issues with
wages and incomes policy. Right.
Right. It was an economic policy came into place in 1993 after we had to send home 4,000 people, cut salaries by 8%, and where it was felt it would be better to have the labor movement work in conjunction with the government and the private sector, so as to avoid a lot of chaos during that troublesome period, so that there were no persons really representing the social sector in that social partnership, the self-community social partnership. I believe a case can be made now for having a genuine social partnership, which would include social and civic organizations,